number 23-9606, Ruiz Nava v. Garland. Counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is William O'Donnell, and I'm here representing the petitioner, Jose David Ruiz Nava, who is present here with his family in the courtroom today. I stand before you today with two issues, and the first being whether the immigration judge abused their discretion when they denied Mr. Ruiz Nava's request for a continuance, and two, whether the judge improperly denied petitioner's request for relief from removal. We are in agreement with the government on a couple issues, the first being these two issues presented before the court today lead into one another. It's our position, though.
Counsel, let me just make sure I'm understanding, because your brief really focuses, for the most part, on the continuance issue and doesn't necessarily separate out the hardship issue. But if I'm understanding what you just said, they're two separate issues?
They are two separate issues, and they lead into one. And when this appeal brief was submitted, the legal landscape regarding extreme and exceptionally unusual hardship and whether that was even an appeal reviewable order before this court, it would change in Wilkerson v. Garland in March of 2024 when the Supreme Court did say the extreme and exceptionally unusual hardship standard is a question of law reviewable. In the underlying case, the problem that we have presented before here is Mr. Ruiz Nava did appear at his final hearing. He did present evidence to demonstrate that the hardship he would face would meet the level of extreme and exceptionally unusual hardship. But rather than accepting that evidence, the immigration judge just marked it for identification. It's not a part of the record. And that's the problem that I would have had bringing or more fully developing that issue before this court. The immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals said—
Well, you didn't ask to supplement your brief, did you?
No, Your
Honor.
Or
file a 28J letter?
No, Your Honor. And I do believe the due process is a more primary concern because 20 days, Your Honor, from September 10th, 2019 to September 30th, 2019, that's how long Mr. Ruiz Nava had to prepare for his final hearing. That's the date. September 10th is when the notice was sent out. September 30th is when his hearing was. That's the problem that this court is faced with. Whether or not that is sufficient time to allow someone who is facing removal from the United States, who's been here for over 30 years, to prepare his case and going into the court, have and submit documents to the immigration judge for them just to say, I'm not accepting them. I'm sorry. I'm not even going to consider them. I'll take them. I'll identify them, but I'm not going to accept them. And I'm going to deny your case because you refuse to corroborate the evidentiary standard. So Mr. Ruiz Nava, in essence, was in a catch-22. You didn't corroborate your evidence, but even though I have your evidence, I'm not going to accept it and consider it.
What? Where is that? I just read the order this morning and I didn't see where the IG said that I'm not going to consider your evidence.
It was, and I can find it, I believe it was marked as identification purposes only. I will...
Certainly the IJ referred to it, and the IG recounted what the hardship evidently, or what it was proposed to be. And then the... As I understand it, the IJ did not say, but I'm not going to consider any of this evidence. Instead, the IJ found generally credible the applicant, and then from there said it's not sufficiently corroborated. For instance, the wife's medical condition, and said, what's the medication? And nobody could tell him what the medication was. That sounds like a failure of corroboration.
Your Honor, the Board of Immigration Appeals decision talks really about the transcripts. It doesn't talk about the documentary evidence. And the wife, Mr. David Ruiz Nava's wife at that time, actually suffered from severe mental health requiring hospitalizations. So the issue there was she couldn't corroborate the hospitalization.
Well, she was long employed as a paralegal, including the date of the hearing, right?
Yes.
And that's something that the IJ could consider.
Yes, that was something that IJ did consider. But most of the, I guess you can say, evidentiary issues presented to the immigration judge at that time was testimony alone. And I will, during my time for rebuttal, find where in the record they said, I'll mark it for identification purposes.
But what I'm looking for is where he said, I'm not going to consider it. That's what I thought you said.
That is what the immigration judge says. I'm not going to accept it into the record. I'm going to mark it for identification purposes only.
And yet does review every bit of it.
It does appear that she reviewed some of the evidence, but mostly the immigration judge based the testimony as the evidence, the only evidence presented. Because, again, there was documents that were requested. The basis of the continuance was the medical records had been previously requested. They just had not been provided to Mr. Ruiz Nava at that time from the hospital. And we're going back again to 20 days is how long he had to prepare his case. And this brings me to a good point. The other issue or the other thing that we do agree with on behalf of the government is their table that talks about the continuances requested, and that's page 5 and 6 and going into 7 of their brief. From July 16th of 2019 to September 30th of 2019, 3 different dates and times were provided to the petitioner here in this case on when his case may be. In July 16th, 2019, the immigration judge took 7 other individuals and granted them a continuance to September 17th of 2019. That is in the record on page AR-193.
Could you just explain why he couldn't have been collecting corroborating evidence during that period of time?
Your Honor, that is a great question, and it's a simple answer. Based upon, and it's included in the record here, he was not provided his case file from his previous counsel until July 8th of 2019.
Well, I understand, but starting in July, we're not talking about 20 days. We're talking about about 3 months, aren't we?
About 60 days or so.
All right, 60 days.
Yes, he was in the process of collecting, and it's demonstrated in the record. He just hadn't received the documents up until that time. Those things were outside of his control of how long it may have taken some of these places to compile, for example, the medical records for the wife to corroborate the evidentiary standard. Those things were outside his control.
What supports that? Was that in the record? We went to the hospital and we asked for the records on such and such a date, and they said it's going to take 3 months to get them to you?
I don't believe a specific date was talked about in the transcripts or on the record, but it was discussed. Rosas testified that she had already requested, they just had not arrived at that time of the hearing.
But it's an overstatement to say it was out of his control.
I respectfully disagree with that.
Well, what supports it? What in the record supports it other than your statement?
Nothing in the record would support it other than a request was made for the records. They just had not come yet.
And we don't know if the request was made the day before.
That is true, Your Honor.
But could I just ask you, in terms of the ground on which the court denied the continuance, it was lack of due diligence, is that
yes.
correct? And is that a permissible ground to deny a continuance?
It's one of the factors that the immigration judge should consider. Under the matter of Hashmi factors, they also have to talk about whether the evidence that is waiting or the grounds for continuance is it probative to the case at chief? Is it non-cumulative?
Can we review a finding that there was failure to act diligently?
I believe that's a question of fact that the court can review as a mixed question of law as well. And
what's our standard of review?
To be honest, I would have to say I would suggest a de novo review, and the reason why I say a de novo review is I believe the recent case of Lopez or Looper Enterprises, the one that discussed sort of take back of Chevron, has changed the legal landscape on deference to agencies.
Well, why are we talking about deference to an agency? I mean, if an immigration judge says, you know, Bob Bacharach, you waited 60 days, why are we talking about Chevron or R or Kaiser? That's just a fact.
I think the due diligence, and to answer your question, Your Honor, the due diligence standard is a question of law that the court can wade into. I think the matter of Hashim factors.
Well, I thought you just said it's a mixed question of law and fact. In a mixed question of law and fact, obviously involves both components. And so then I think our case law says that when you have a mixed question of law and fact, the question is, which is the predominant question in this particular scenario? There's no question that the immigration judge applied the correct legal standard. So the question is just whether or not the non-citizen waited too long. That's just a fact, right?
I don't think 60 days is waiting too long, Your Honor. Mr. Ruiz Nava had counsel with him at all stages of the proceeding up until March of 2019. And as I discussed in the BIA brief, the grounds for withdrawal, which is important, they need to notify the petitioner as to what scheduled deadlines they need to meet with any upcoming hearing.
Well, why shouldn't he have started to collect the corroborating evidence in March?
Based upon what is in part of the record, he did start. He just didn't know what his attorney had submitted to the court and what was not there. So, again, he's not trying to recreate the record. He is trying to gather as much information as possible, compare his file from his immigration attorney that's been with him for over 10 years, and submit something to the court.
All right. I need to come back to what I started asking you about, because it seems as though the thrust of your argument is that he needed more time to gather evidence to corroborate his hardship argument. Is that?
That's the thrust of my argument,
okay.
Your Honor.
But it seemed like you also were saying that there were two issues, not just the continuance issue, but the hardship issue itself. Is it your position that the district or that the agency erred on the hardship issue based on the evidence that was presented?
I do believe so, Your Honor, because the petitioner and his wife testified credibly at that time, and if the only evidence that they had is a credible testimony to support the extreme and exceptionally unusual hardship, I believe he met it, because there is case law there from the Board of Immigration Appeals that says severe and significant mental health constitutes
All right. I understand that point. One other thing on the hardship issue. You've talked about his wife. Is the hardship argument limited to his wife at this point, or does it extend to other family members, his parents and his children? Because that was mentioned, but you haven't said anything about that.
It did, Your Honor, extended to both his parents, who are lawful permanent residents. They have thyroid conditions. Altogether, he has seven qualifying relatives. So there was substantial hardship. But I do see I'm getting close to time. I'd like to reserve the remaining for rebuttal.
I do have a question for you. Sometimes the presiding judge will give you a minute at the end. But on this notion of facts and mixed questions of law and fact, seems to me the fact is that the IJ said, you should have been doing more to get the materials to us. That's a fact. That's not a mixed question of law and fact. And if it's a fact, Wilkinson says, we can't review that. So do we even have jurisdiction to meet the argument that you're making?
I do believe so, because that fact equates to a due diligence standard. And a due diligence standard, I believe, is reviewable.
Well, what's the due diligence? I know what the hardship standard is, because I look at the statute. What do you maintain that the due diligence legal standard is, other than you have to be prompt about going about your business?
I think it's a totality of the circumstances of what other factors were there, such as how long did he actually have to prepare from he was provided notice to his final hearing? What other steps, what other evidence?
The IJ went through all of that.
I think she missed, our position is she misstated the record because it wasn't sufficient. September 10th of 2019.
You're arguing the fact that you're saying I would argue, or I would decide this differently. And so please give me relief, but Wilkinson doesn't allow that, or does it? And if so, tell me why.
I believe Wilkinson allows that on the grounds that when you get into facts that apply to clearly demonstrated legal standards, it needs to meet a threshold. And that might not be the best way to answer that question, Your Honor. In my mind, it is, but
okay,
I know it's a hard one to answer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. I'm going to give you a minute rebuttal, so you're not done.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
Good morning. May it please the government, Robert Tennyson. May it please the court of arguments for the government. Wow. Got that backwards.
We'll try our hardest.
Yes. I think since there are questions about Wilkinson and jurisdiction and all of that that you've got, let me spring to those first. First off, under Patel, generally this court has no jurisdiction to review a determination relating to cancellation or removal. What Wilkinson does is it provides an exception under, notes the exception, provides some clarity as to what that exception is under 1252 A2D. And that covers, as Guerrero-Lasperre said, both questions of law and mixed questions of law and fact. Generally, with mixed questions of law and fact, this court's standard of review, depending upon under U.S. Bank, say, for example, is going to be, either more deferential or not, depending upon how factually involved it is. Here, the due diligence standard, if it is not factual, if we're not just re-looking at the agency's factual findings, which are beyond this court's jurisdiction, then if we are looking at the application of the due diligence standard. That application of the due diligence standard, because it is so fact-dependent, under U.S. Bank and under Wilkinson would be a deferential one. And because the determination, it has to do with a good cause determination, which is entirely within the discretion of the agency, except insofar as the Attorney General has cabined that in with regulations.
Could I just ask about, assuming that we review the issue and Wilkinson refers to a deferential.
Right, Your Honor.
But what does that mean?
Right. I think that's going to depend upon the questions being decided. So, for example, here, I would say that given that the standard is entirely crafted by the Attorney General out of the the good cause regulation, that we would apply an abuse of discretion standard. This court could apply a substantial evidence standard if it decides to. Really, both of them boil down to whether, with substantial evidence, it's whether a reasonable trier of fact would be compelled to find in petitioner's favor. Abuse of discretion is an unreasonable determination if you abuse discretion.
Why does the Attorney General's enactment of a regulation trigger an abuse of discretion standard? Is that just intuitive to you, or
it is kind of intuitive? I mean, the thing is that it's the way in which the Attorney General manages his own courtroom, right? And the way in which the agency manages its own business, and it's not something that's dictated by a statutory standard, which is where we get into the question of whether or not you have a mixed question of the application of a legal standard. And what good cause is so open-ended that really is, up to the discretion of the agency itself to parameters.
Is that because of R or Kaiser?
It's not an our deference question, insofar as that our deference relates to, I guess it is an our deference insofar as it relates to the Attorney General's construction of his own regulations. But it's broader than that, simply because this is the Attorney General offering his own. It's not a substantive standard. It's a standard for sort of the moderation of the courtroom, which seems to be something where the Attorney General would have more deference and ability to provide, you know, broader parameters. There's one thing, if briefly moving on from the standard of review, the petitioner indicated that the immigration judge marked for evidence, marked for identification evidence the petitioner had submitted. What the petitioner had submitted wasn't medical evidence with regard to his son, Oscar. It wasn't with regard to the thyroid issues or high blood pressure of his mother, or medical documents with regard to his spouse. It was an I-130 that his spouse had filed on his behalf before the hearing, and that was it. So it didn't pertain to any of those evidence, any of those issues that the immigration judge found to be not corroborated before him.
But
yes, Your Honor.
What's an I-130?
Oh, an I-130 is an application, is a petition for alien beneficiary. It's the thing that, say, for example, the spouse will file for the husband to say, this is my beneficiary, you know, that I would like to seek further relief on. And so what it would, it's sort of the first step to seeking adjustment of status. And so the petitioner, because he entered originally as a non-immigrant and overstayed his visa, he has the ability to adjust his status later on, if he has someone who can petition for him and he can adjust. But that's outside the scope of the cancellation hearing. And that's something that would that USCIS would be taking care of.
Let me just ask you a question about the denial of continuance issue. So this case has been kicking around for a long time.
A very long time.
And there were scheduled and rescheduled. By my count, up to 35 times.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So how can we expect Mr. Ruiz Nava to be continually prepared when he can't even be sure when his hearing is going to happen?
This is a fair question. So the thing is that the hearing that he actually had was only 3 days behind his scheduled hearing, and that hearing had been scheduled for over 2 years, or almost 2 years. That hearing was originally scheduled, I believe, in October of 2017. And that hearing would have been for September 27th, 2019. The only change that occurred is about 2 weeks out, that September 27th hearing was knocked back 3 days to September 30th.
But that's a big deal if the lawyer is available on the 27th and he's not available on the 30th. Especially after, as my colleague noted, roughly 35 different scheduled hearings.
Right, Your Honor. So there are a couple of things that attorney could have done. He could have filed an appearance. And had Mr. Ruiz Nava sought an attorney and obtained an attorney with adequate time before, say, the original hearing was filed, 2-3 weeks out, when there was a change in the hearing, that attorney could have filed a continuance saying, you know, in advance, stating, I have another hearing, I have something else on that date. And, you know, you changed the hearing 2 weeks out, could you please ask for another? Could you please change the date? But there was no appearance by that attorney.
What is the record on the identity of the other, or the attorney?
We don't have any.
Was that ever offered?
It was never offered. He just said, I have an attorney, but nothing was ever filed. So we don't know who the attorney was. All we have is his word that he sought one, and that attorney backed out when the hearing date was changed. The other thing is, he had until the date of the hearing, he could have filed that continuance date, you know, a motion for a continuance in advance. Immigration courts, as you know, I think is well known, are extremely busy. They have a large number of cases that they have to manage. And so having a date for a merits hearing is kind of a big deal. And coming in on the date of that merits hearing and saying, I'm sorry, I haven't found an attorney and I haven't found my documents. It isn't, you know, after 13 years of waiting, that is somewhat important.
Can I press you a little
sure.
bit on that? I mean, all of that is indisputably correct in a vacuum, but as Judge Matheson said, this has been scheduled roughly 35 times. And yes, maybe the lawyer should have filed an entry of appearance, and maybe he or she should have filed a motion for a continuance and said, I was available on the 27th, I'm not available that Monday, but he or she didn't do that. And sure, the immigration court is very busy, as is evidenced by the fact that they changed the date roughly over 30 times. But how is it not an abuse of discretion to say that because of the lawyer's procedural failure to file an entry or to seek a continuance, I, the court, am going to deny this person the opportunity even to just get another day, to get a 36th date in which the lawyer is available. Certainly, if the lawyer had filed a motion for a continuance, I think you would agree that any immigration judge, I would think, would say, of course I'm going to grant this. I mean, it would be an abuse of discretion to deny it. So why is the lawyer's failure sufficient to penalize this particular individual?
So first, I'm not sure it would be an abuse of discretion. You have to think that the petitioner had 6 months from the withdrawal of his prior counsel to go and find new counsel. It's not as though this was a last-minute thing. It's not as though...
If you have a trial on the 27th, and let's say it's been pending for 8 years, and you have, let's say you're the lawyer, and you're available on Friday, in which it's scheduled to start, and then the judge says we're going to continue it until Monday, but you know what, you have a European vacation scheduled that week, and so is the client just on their own saying, you know, that a court would have the discretion to say, well, sorry, you're going to have to represent yourself pro se. I'm not going to continue it just because the lawyer's unavailable that week.
I think that the immigration judge, on one hand, if that were the case, that, you know, and that was clearly the case. We had an attorney. We knew that there was an attorney in the case. And that attorney had appeared before, and then the attorney couldn't make it, and he had shown up on his own. And we knew the name of the attorney. We knew all of that information. That would be a different story. Here, we don't know who the attorney is. This seems like a last-minute excuse. We don't have the information from which the immigration judge was acting irrationally, was not acting within his discretion to conclude, this is just too vague. This is not certain enough for me to say that you had that attorney and that attorney would have been ready to go. I believe that's the response. And on that reading, there's no abuse of discretion to not allow him to require him to go forward and not grant the continuance. Turning to the documents, again, one thing that I'd want to note is that the petitioner had a long time, particularly with regard to the documents for Oscar and with respect to his mother. I know one thing that he said is that he couldn't have known that those documents were not in his file until that file was turned over to him in July. The thing is the way in which his private firm would have had those documents is if he had turned them over to them. So he would have been the person who knew whether or not those documents were there in the first place, generally. And second, with regard to his spouse, they knew they were getting married in July. She could have requested at any time prior to the hearing. We don't know what date she requested her medical information. We don't know what date he requested the medical information for his son and for his mother. So there was no abuse of discretion by the immigration judge in finding that additional time to obtain those documents was not needed. Unless this court has any further questions for me.
Not the most central point, but I thought I'd read in one of the decisions that they'd only been married for 2 weeks.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So they got married in September or
July? They got married in September. I believe it was right. September 17th.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm going to be quick. To answer the question where it is the judge said that they're not going to accept them into the record, that's in AR 206, line 16 through 20.
But that isn't on the disputed evidence, or that is simply the form that
government counsel mentioned on marital status.
And corroborating evidence. It was a big packet of evidence, Your Honor. I believe it is part of the record, but she said it is not an exhibit.
Okay. Well, I thought I understood counsel on the other side say that it was only the form.
It was the forms, and I'll try to make this as quick as possible. It's not just the forms, but in order to submit the forms on immigration, you have to actually corroborate them with documentary evidence.
Okay, but it's not medical records or anything along those lines that the hardship is being based on.
I do believe that there was establishing not only a valid marriage, but also some of, I think her health insurance was in there and stuff like that. I can't be for certain on that.
Okay, thank you.
So in Wilkinson v. Garland for the standard of review, they actually discussed undisputed or established facts is a question of law. So that would be subject to de novo review. And the last point I want to make is...
Well, but Wilkinson also talked about deference. So how do you reconcile those two things?
I don't think that deference would be owed, especially on a strictly question of law. Even though the regulations, I guess I would have to brief you on the Lopez and the deference, but I think the due diligence for that question of law is strictly a de novo review. But I thank you for allowing me additional time. Have a great day.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your arguments this morning. The case will be submitted and counsel are excused.